story is a story of
kind of a lot of little short stories. And I call it F to the fourth power, if you will. It's about failure, friends, faith, and forgiveness. So that's kind of my story. So my first story is experience can be painful, especially when failure is the lesson. So I just finished college and had an opportunity to coach the equivalent of kind of an elite football team. You know, many years ago, there was no such thing as elite or travel or any of that stuff. And this team ended up producing three All-Staters and one guy that went to play for the Cincinnati Bengals. And during this one particular tryout, this one kid was trying out for quarterback. He was like a really cocky kid, you know, had that attitude. And so in this one drill, I made him go up against one of the really tough linebackers like three times in a row, trying to kind of knock the cockiness out of him. And he ended up quitting the team after that day and never came back. And in my mind, I'm thinking, well, he just never had it. And then fast forward 3 years, and I was working at, and I used to work out at the YMCA at 6 in the morning before work, and he comes strolling in with a group of other guys. And I realized that these guys were all coming from Fair Oaks Hospital, which is a alcohol and drug rehab program. And when I looked at them, it hit me really hard that, you know, I was put in a position of responsibility. And I blew it because that kid probably wasn't cocky. He was just probably looking for someone to show him attention or something. And instead of reaching out to him, I kind of went the wrong way. And I blew my responsibility. And that weighed very heavy on me. It still does to this day. So, you know, I take that failure as a great lesson. My next story, I would say, I call the Holy Spirit. There was a very famous actor that everybody knew. And he was attending an event. And everybody who anybody was invited to this event. It was amazing, the people there. And several people started requesting him to get up and give one of his famous soliloquies. You know, just, he had such a command of the English language, it was incredible. And finally, after major pestering, he agreed to do that. So he got up in front of the crowd, and you know, he started off by, to be or not to be, that is the question. And he went through, you know, Shakespeare's story. And when he was done, people from the other room had come in, and it was a huge crowd, and they applauded him and said, this guy is unbelievable, and better in person than anything we've ever seen. And they kept saying to him, we want more, please do one more, please do one more. And he said to the crowd, okay, I'll do it on one condition. If you allow that man in the back to come up and do a presentation after me. And the man in the back was a priest. And they said, sure, whatever you want, whatever you want. So this famous actor got up there, and he starts off with, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leadeth me beside still waters. And he finishes Psalm 23, and everybody just is in a roar. They're just spellbound with him. And then the priest comes up, and he's an elderly, frail man, and he recites Psalm 23 also. And when he's finished, no applause, no nothing. Just steps down, you know, whatever. And the actor goes to the people and he goes, you missed something very valuable. And everybody kind of can't figure it out, you know. He goes, you applauded me when in fact the priest was the one deserving of the applause. And people still don't get it. And he said, for you see, I know the words, but this man knows the author. And when I heard that story, it began my desire to understand that I didn't understand the author. So that sunk into me very, very deeply. And it was at that point in time that I kind of needed to understand the Bible. I didn't know the author. So God has a way of putting friends in front of all of us. And I was invited to meet this gentleman named Andy Hijack. He's a a golf salesperson, the top golf salesperson in the country for FootJoy golf shoes, etc. I liked golf, etc. And he was really gifted at small groups and one-on-one Bible studies. And he, in particular, would do Project Timothy. And it's a Christian businessman's program. And so he said, let's get together. And we got together at a diner, and we started the program. And I remember the very first meeting with him, and he said, let's pray. And we put our head down, and I was doing one of these, like looking around the room, thinking this was really weird, that I'll pray. And during that first Bible study, one-on-one, I was very distracted. I was more concerned about the people around me than listening to what the first chapter of Project Timothy was about. So I said to Andy, could we meet in my house? Because I feel like, I'm uncomfortable with the current process. So, the lesson I learned was, you have to put all the distractions aside, and you really got to stay focused on what you're learning. And Andy turned out to be, a fabulous, fabulous guy for me. So at that point, I'm probably different than a lot of people, and I accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior when I was 33 years old. And the reason I did that was because I looked around me and I started noticing my friends and other people I knew that were giving their life to Christ, and they had a story, like we heard with R.A. Dickey. Something was gone wrong, and they had problems, whether it was drug addiction, whatever it was just a really bad story. And I kept looking back and saying, my life is really good. My life is really good. I got a nice house, I have a wife, one kid at that time. And I said, I don't want to wait until I need God to change my life from something really bad to get better. I want to get myself in a position that when that problem comes about, I will understand what I need to do, and I'll be right with God in some way. So I'm a little bit different than some other people. So I gave my life to Christ, and I started attending an Assembly of God church. Now, to go from Roman Catholic to Assembly of God is probably the furthest extremes. You go from a hope, I'm out of here in 50 minutes, to a three-hour service. And I used to go by myself, and then I had my wife come, and she did not like it at all. So I sat down with this pastor, and this church was brand new. It was in the basement of like a catering hall, restaurant, whatever. And I went to the pastor, Ron, and I said, my wife's having a problem with this. And he looked me in the eye, and he said, you need to leave this church. And you need to go find a church that's right with your family. And I said, wow, that was amazing that he would do that. Because his church was a startup. They were struggling. But he taught me that, you have to do what's right in God's eyes. And we ended up changing churches, and it turned out to be a great thing for my family. My next story is, there's no such thing as a coincidence with God. And, I hear a lot of people say, what a coincidence of things. And this one's the story's going to carry through a couple stories, so you got to bear with me a little bit. But when I was working in New Jersey, my administrative assistant was named Joyce. We used to talk about a lot of different topics. And then she invited me to an African-American empowerment conference. And it was run by her pastor, a guy named Reverend Buster Soares. And Buster Soares was like the number two man with Jesse Jackson in Chicago. And he had the same ability that Jesse had. I mean, when he would speak, he was just, deliver an incredibly powerful message, and he was really good. So I said, yeah, sure, I'll go with that. She brings me up, like, almost the front row, and there's, like, 500 people there. And I look around. I am the only white person there. The only white person. And that was an incredible eye-opener for me, because at that point, I started to get a better appreciation for what minorities feel when they're either in a work environment or when they come to attend meetings. Because I started going to like other like bank conferences. I started looking around and going, oh my God, there's like you know, a couple minorities here or there, and I started thinking back about that meeting. And I said, you know, it's really hard to imagine light from other people's perspectives. You know, sometimes you can try to think about it, but it's really hard to imagine it. And from that point on, I started having a different view of things. So, you know, so what's God's plan? So, I thought I wanted to work with kids. And God bless you. I remember, I always work out by myself. And I remember going, hey, God, you know, this is what I want to do. And just, you know, let's get started. So I decided to call Focus on the Family. They had a program out. It was called Life on the Edge Tour. And it was geared towards teenage kids. And it was they were kind of rolling it around the country. So I called them up. And that door got shut so fast. It was unbelievable, you know. I just couldn't adhere to their requirements. However, the person on the phone, for some odd reason, said to me, by the way, have you ever heard of this guy, Buster Sorez? And I said, she said, he spoke in Cleveland. We don't know where he's from, but I'm just trying to find people around the country that might know who he is. And I go, yeah, I know him. And that was the weirdest, out of left field. Where did this come from, right? I said, yeah, I know him. And so I didn't get to work with kids. It just wasn't in the cards. But, you know, the Lord has something better in store. I wasn't sure what it was. So why did that door shut? On Christmas Eve, one Christmas Eve, I was having dinner in a restaurant in a town called Basking Ridge, New Jersey. And the owner of the restaurant came up to me and he said, you know, I'm involved with this organization called the Good News Home for Women. It's a long-term alcohol drug rehab program, faith-based, et cetera. And I know your background is financing construction projects. Could you just come to the meeting and, you know, so we can talk to you or whatever? And I said, yeah, I'll come to your board meeting. So I show up and the board members are like up at this table, and then there's like almost nobody in the audience. I mean, nobody. I'm thinking that's kind of weird. And my friend Jack says, come, sit up here in the front. I go, oh, that's kind of weird. I'm just an observer. And I sit up there, and during the meeting, the kind of CFO is a guy named George Curtis. And he's going through the financials, and he said, right now our bank account has $100. And George is sitting next to me. I remember I'm involved in banking. And I go, George, does that concern you? And George looks at me and says, no, you know, the Lord always provides. And I'm sitting there going, what am I doing here? This guy doesn't get it. Doesn't get it. He doesn't understand. This organization's absolutely broke. And my friend Jack invites me back to the next meeting, and he's like, hey, you're on the board. We voted you in. And I said, what is that? I'm voted in. And I'm like, okay. And I couldn't wait for the presentation. I went right up to George, and I said, hey, did you make payroll? Did you make payroll? And he goes, yeah, right now our account has $10,000. And I said, $10,000? And he said, yeah, we got a whole bunch of money in, you know, and one fairly sizable donation came from Texas. We have no clue who that person is or how it came about. And I'm like, wow. So, you know, I'm thinking, like, I'm there to help them, and now they're starting to give me lessons in life, you know? So, you know, using our logic, is a time for God to have fun with us. You know, that's why I like that, you know? You know, I tried to be logical, and God just started to have fun with me. My next story is, you know, it's not about me. So I'm on the board, and I started to meet some of the people that were going through this program, and I was very uncomfortable meeting some of these people, and I couldn't figure out why. You know, did I feel like I was better than them? That these people had a problem? I couldn't figure out why. I just didn't feel comfortable. And you know, I grew up with a bunch of guys that ended up dying of drug overdoses or having AIDS, and you know, maybe that was part of it. I don't know, but I just felt uncomfortable. And I thought, you know, maybe we need to learn more about their past. So I told the chairman of our group, I said, you know, we should have somebody come to one of our board meetings that's going through the program and talk to us. Maybe it'd be really helpful, too, because it would motivate us. And he said, sure. And I still remember this one girl, Kaisha was her name, and she came up and she talked about her story. And I was like, wow, man, living under a bridge in a cardboard box, and, you know, all this stuff. And the program is you had to stay there a year. And at the end of the year, they have a, you know, a ceremony, and they've completed it, and they're going to go back out into kind of the real world. And I remember talking to her and looking at her. And I got to tell you, she looked prettier than Whitney Houston when it was over. And I am not making that up. She was stunningly beautiful. She was transformed like no person I've ever seen in my life. She had God in her life for the first time. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is what it's about, to be transformed. And she said to me, I'm scared. I said, what are you scared about? She goes, I'm fearful that I'm going to go back out and I'm going to return to the workplace and I'm going to get caught up in my past. And she said, and I just like humbled me, like, you know, here's this beautiful woman still with fear. And she just said, but I know my faith in God will give me my strength. And I was like, wow, this person has nothing but faith, and she's stronger than me. And I was just like, oh, it's incredible. So the bigger picture. Sometimes, you know, when we do things, we always think about, you know, our little world, whatever. So about a year later, the Good News Home came to me, and they wanted to build a facility. They had this gigantic cow barn, and, you know, two-story, so huge, and we were trying to figure a way to convert it into expanding living quarters, blah, blah, blah. So I wrote a grant request to the government to get some money, and they sent the person out, walked through what we did, and it was quite interesting. And then about a month later, we got rejected. We got rejected because we were biblically based, and that violated their governance. And I was like, so I went and I researched their rules, and they had passed that rule 2 weeks after the guy was out to visit us. So I found out that the head of the organization happened to be Jewish, and we were Christian. And he didn't like the idea. And I was like, oh, really? So I found out who the donors were. So this was a private-public partnership. I found out who the donors were. And the number one donor was the Presbyterian Church. So I went back to my chairman, and I said, hey, when he saw him, I said, we need to notify the Presbyterian Church what they're doing. And he looked at me, and he said, no, we're not going to. He said, do you realize the good that this organization does for so many people? And if they stopped doing that good, there'd be a lot of people that wouldn't benefit for what they're doing. So let's just look at the big picture. And the big picture is a lot of people are being helped. Let's just, you know, shake the dust off our sandals and let's move on. I said, oh, wow. That was very interesting for me. And I'd rather fight it. And he'd tell me, no, back off and let's just let it go. So God's plan gets boldly revealed from time to time. You know, sometimes we try to figure out what's going on, and God just kind of like throws himself at us. Back to the Good News Home. So my admin says to me, I think it would really be good for you to go have a one-on-one conversation with Reverend Buster Soares. So Soares also had a master's in urban planning, and he was in like kind of New Brunswick area, which is kind of a little bit tougher neighborhood. And so go meet with him. He's looking to redo his church, and he's doing other things. So I go and I meet with him. So we have this like conversation for a while, and at the end he goes, so what can I do for you? He said, for me? I said, well, I work for this organization, Good News Home for Women. The person running it just died of a heart attack. Her name was Ruth. And she just died of a heart attack. And we don't have any candidates. We don't have anybody that could run this organization. I don't know what to do. And I was sitting there, and Joyce was sitting next to me, and Reverend Soares is there, and he says, come with me. You walk out of his office, and he turns, and there's this woman sitting over here, and he said, I want to introduce you to Ernest Winsfield. She's your new executive director. I said, what? Now, Ernestine is sitting there, and she has no clue what he's saying. No clue whatsoever. And he goes, this is your new executive director. And Ernestine looks at Joyce. They were friends. They're like, what the heck is going on here? And so I was like, oh, hey, nice meeting you, whatever. And I leave, and then Joyce starts explaining what's going on, and Ernestine and I talk. And she comes in and interviews, and about 2 months later, we bring her on as the executive director. Mm-hmm. She had just retired, and she was a very interesting person. She was the first person to bring street smarts to our organization. And some of the things that she taught were the most incredible things. I remember when she said, people are going around saying it's really hard to adopt children. And she said, it's the easiest thing in the world. I don't know what the issue is. I said, I don't understand. And she goes, I just walk the streets, and I'll pull kids off the streets and have them come live with me. And I said, really? She goes, yeah. You know, some of them don't work out, some of them do. But you can find somebody to bring in your house anytime. It's easy. And those were kind of some of the lessons that she brought. And it was amazing to see, you know, somebody, you know, everybody says, well, somebody doesn't have street smarts. Well, there's street smarts, and then there's, like, real street smarts. And she was wonderful. She was on fire for the Lord, and she did a wonderful job and still does. My next story is, why is forgiveness so hard? You know? And I was working for a bank in their loan departments, and I transferred over into real estate October of 87. So if anybody knows that was Black Monday when the stock market collapsed and everything fell apart. And I was given a portfolio of real estate loans that were just collapsing and falling apart. And I was trying to manage these assets. And then about a year later, we had like our loan review and audit people come through, and they found a discrepancy in one of my files. And my boss, senior VP, went to the executive VP and said, we have a problem with Barry. I think he's acting kind of fraudulently, trying to hide stuff. We need to have loan review come in and do a complete file review of all of his assets. And the executive VP said, no, we're not going to do that. I want you to confront them. My boss didn't do that for about 3 weeks. And then the executive VP kind of raised up the issue. And it turned out that it was a typo in a document that, like an appraiser did, not me. It was a typo. And I looked, I found it in about 5 minutes. But at that point in time, I had so much anger that my boss set me up. And he tried to make me look really bad. And you know, to have somebody, have an audit team come in and review you, that's as bad as a life can get, right? And I was so mad at this guy, and I couldn't let my anger go. I couldn't. I kept getting headaches that were so bad. I actually cracked my teeth, like grinding my teeth, and I had to get, you know, whatever. And it wouldn't let go. And I quit that job because I knew I really didn't have a future there, based, you know, working with this guy and whatever. And I quit, and I went somewhere else. And that anger wouldn't let go. It wouldn't let go. And I just, it kept bothering me. And the Holy Spirit kept telling me, you need to forgive. And I would go to Bible studies, and I hear people talking about forgiveness. I just, what is this forgiveness, man? This guy hurt me. I'm angry. I'm not going to forgive him. And finally, it came to me that I do have to forgive him, or else these headaches aren't going to go away. And my blood, I start sweating for no reason, you know? So I called him up. I said, let's go to lunch. I went to lunch, and I said, hey, John, I've been really mad at you for a long time, and I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. And it was like he didn't even hear what I said. He just wanted the conversation to end, and, you know, let's get on to something else. Can we be friends or whatever? And the second I said that, I had this unbelievable weight. Like, you couldn't realize how heavy it was. Just get lifted. It's undescribable. I mean, and the anger and the frustration. I don't think I ever had another one of those frustrating headaches ever again. It just all was gone. You know? I don't know if John got it or didn't, but the fact that I confessed my forgiveness was just an incredible, incredible thing. So, you know, if you have a situation where you're just having a struggle to forgive, just go do it. Just go do it. My next story is, I did this, God, it's your turn now. When I changed jobs, I thought I would start up my own company, and partnered with a guy. This guy was the head of the Dreyfus Fund, he was vice chairman of Merrill Lynch, head of strategic investments. We partnered to start this thing, and 30 days in, he dies of a massive heart attack. It's all done, gone. So I'm kind of without a job, and I start working with this like high-end real estate advisory firm as a like kind of consultant doing odd jobs here and there. And I meet a guy named Roland Spiota, and we start praying, and we would go to like a church at lunchtime and just sit and pray and meditate and stuff. And he said, you know what, you need to go pray and fast. And I said, all right. So I go to the church that I was going to like on Wednesday-ish, and I just go in a room and I just fast and I pray the whole day, 24 hours. And I walk out and I say, okay, God, I did my end. It's your turn. And I'm expecting an answer. I'll wait a week, but please, no longer than that, you know? And nothing happens. Absolutely nothing happens. And I'm like, oh, gosh. So I go back and I do that again a second time. Nothing happens. Nothing happens. And, you know, I did this several times. And I was like, so what's going on, God? Nothing. And then one day when I'm back at that firm, this guy Peter says, hey, take a look at this document. And I look at it. It's from GMAC, and he said, I'm having trouble understanding it. And I'm like, I look at it 2 seconds, I can figure it out because it's kind of my background. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, okay, can you meet with these guys? They're coming in, they have a big assignment for us. So I meet with them, I start talking to them, and we kind of hit it off. And they offered me a job, and I could have gone to either Washington, D.C., Minneapolis, or L.A., and they were headquartered in Minneapolis. The lessons I always learned is you want to work at the headquarters. So I said, sure. So I go out there and interview, and I had this incredible peace that came over me. And it's really, you can't describe it, but, you know, it's just, like, we talk about discernment, right? And it was like, God just came upon me and gave me this peace that this was the right job for me. This was the right thing. I said, all right. So I took the job, and it required me to commute from New Jersey to Minneapolis, New Jersey to anywhere else in the country for a whole year. Trying to sell my house, the market was pitiful. They weren't going to buy my house. My boss didn't think I was going to stick it out and everything else. So I did it for a year, and then it turns out that I sold my house. The job was kind of working out okay. But my family life back home was going sideways. You know, my mother had broke her hip, then she broke her ankle. She was put in a nursing home because she started having dementia. My oldest brother was a year older than me. His wife divorced him to go with another guy. My youngest brother was having kind of mental health issues. And things were going totally sideways. And I remember going back to my mentor friend and said, you know, what do I do? What do I do? And he said, well, you know, God gives you the gift of discernment. You need to just spend more time with God, and he'll give you that discernment. And that inner peace never, ever left me. Whenever I kept talking to God and asking him about my decision of taking on that job, it never left me. And so I learned from that, you know, God gives us discernment, and sometimes we take our personal emotions and try to interpret as discernment, and it's not the case, you know. And this inner peace is incredible. That inner peace has occurred to me another occasion. My wife has a really bad health problem. And these things happened to her. And one of the things happened was that she had a detached retina. And the first doctor that did the surgery was really bad. I mean, really bad. And if you have a detached retina, at least back then, you had to lay face down for 6 weeks as everything healed. And after 6 weeks, you lift your head up and it detached. We went to another doctor, and he did the emergency surgery again, but then he went on vacation, and same thing. And when she lifted her head up, it detached again. So we went to another doctor, and this doctor was like, you know, I think we can heal this. And I remember giving my wife a hug, and we both stood there crying. And she said, I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to lose my sight. And I said, gee, no. And this peace came over me again for the second time. And I was like, gotta do it. You gotta do it, Gene. And she said, okay, but only one more time. And it turned out to be successful. And it was, you know, unbelievable. But this inner peace is incredible. It's strong. You know, my wife's had 26 surgeries. And some of them massive. I mean, you know, so she's got scar tissues everywhere in her body. But, you know, every time I pray, I send notes, I have my Bible, my prayer warriors, and we just pray and pray. My next story is look back to see the future. So in this bank in New Jersey, I started a Bible study, and some people within the bank went to an executive VP and the head of HR complaining that I was doing things. I was sending out invitations on bank letterhead. I was doing it during bank time, all this stuff. Absolutely 100% false lies. But the bank didn't care. Stop it. So we ended up having to find a church, which was harder than I thought, to have a lunchtime Bible study. And one of the church's requirements were, I want to know what religions are these people. So it turned out we had 7 different religions. And one of them was Salvation Army, which I didn't know was a religion. But it's very much a religion based off kind of a military protocol. Anyway, we started doing our Bible study, and one of our things we did was we would have a prayer list. And we would write it down. And after about a year, one of the guys in our group, Ben, was leaving and moving to Seattle. And he said, hey, can we pull out the prayer list? And we pulled out the prayer list. We started going through them, and it was stunning how many of our prayers were answered. Stunning. So, you know, maybe my message is that maybe you should keep a list and just really look back to find out what the future is going to be, because God does answer your prayers, and sometimes we forget what we really asked Him for. Messages are really great. My next story is complacent Christians. When I was in Minneapolis, there was a gentleman there named Bill Schiebler that spoke, gave his testimony. It's probably the most incredible testimony I ever heard. He's a Vietnam guy. His platoon of 186 men, only 4 survived. 4 out of 186. They did a movie on him, on his platoon. It's called Brave Soldiers. With Mel Gibson. And, you know, he talks about certain things. And my son interviewed him one time for a high school project, and his son said, was he ever injured? He said, yeah, I got injured a couple times. And I said, Danny, ask him how you got injured. And he said, well, first time I got shot through the neck. It didn't break my artery. It didn't sever my spine. I got shot through the neck. Second time I got shot in my buttocks. And then the third time I got blown up shrapnel from a hand grenade. And he said, and I was shot down twice out of a helicopter, and I lived. And he started going through these stories, and I'm like, how did he live? How did he survive all this stuff? I mean, who gets shot down out of helicopters twice? Who gets shot 3 times? And he has a whole other story where he saved some Vietnam guy's life, and this guy revealed some key things. He ended up getting a Silver Star about 5 years ago, 30 years later, it was given to him by Schwarzkopf. And his whole message was, the problem is we're all too complacent. We sit back and just, you know, we'll go to a Bible study and it's done. And that hit me hard. Like, yeah, we are too complacent. We need to start being more aggressive. And it was at that point in time that I just said, okay, that's it. And that's when I started a Bible study in Minneapolis. Kind of my last story here is that, you know, I grew up in a blue-collar town. It's called Belleville, New Jersey, right next to Newark. This happens to be where The Sopranos are from, if you ever watched TV. You know, it was a kind of blue-collar town. And my dad was an incredibly loving guy. Absolutely would do anything in the world for us. But he was the kind of dad that, you know, he'd rather like kind of like punch you in the shoulder, you know, than hug you. He had cancer and he was dying. And I remember I was like 22 years old and he had the tubes in him and stuff. And I'm like, I want to hug him. And that's a tough thing to do, you know, when you're like, kind of grow up like, you know, everybody, you know, I have four brothers and like, we're all kind of like, you know, get to fights a lot with each other and stuff. You know, it was tough to do. I remember standing outside the room looking in and going, I gotta hug him. And finally I got up the strength and I went in and hugged him. And I said, Dad, I love you. And so it's from that point on, I made a decision that if I have children, I will hug them and hug them and hug them. And it wasn't because, you know, my dad didn't love me. It just was kind of the way things were. And to this day, my son is 23, my daughter is 18, and I hug them every time. I mean, my daughter, I put her to bed, I hug her, whatever. So, you know, I started doing that not just from my kids, but I started hugging people as well. And in some cultures, you know, in Minneapolis, Norwegians, you know, Scandinavians, hugging is not as commonplace, you know. In Belleville, where there are, you know, Italians, that hugging is a little bit more common. But I just started doing that. And I would say that, you know, just embrace people around you. So with that, I just, you know, my verse is Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. And trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understandings. You know, it's not my plan. It's, you know, it's God's plan. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. So that's kind of
well done.
Well done.
Yep.